south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander, my thoughts ever stray.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. I tell it just like it is, so let's get started. Before I get started today, I have to respond to a lot of emails I've been getting lately. People asking me when I'm going to have my next big seminar down here in Latin America. The big, full-blown one. And since the last few seminars I had were described by some attendees as trying to take a drink of water with a fire hose, based on the fact that such a large amount of information was presented in a limited amount of time. So now, for this next seminar, I've decided that it's not going to be 3 days of seminar and then 2 days later doing the actual off-the-tourist-trail, boots-on-the-ground part. Instead, this time, it's going to be 5 complete days, and in the mornings, me and my crew will be doing our seminar blatherings, and every day after lunch, we'll be hitting the streets, visiting first-world-style hospitals with amazing insurance plans, and we'll hit some doctor's offices and factories and IT centers and gigantic food markets, as well as having a look at those notorious pirate markets, too. You just gotta see it to believe it. And of course, there'll be an in-depth real estate tour too, because I've got to show you the real estate bubble here that's just about ready to pop. That way, you'll be able to scout out some fantastic deals for when that bubble deflates, which should be any time now. Us gringos who watched it happen in 2008 in the States are already seeing the signs. So I'll be giving you the play-by-play on that too. So anyway, like I said, right now I'm in the process of setting up this latest seminar, which will be in a couple of months from now, so stay tuned. Okay, now I have to mention that I have been getting some emails since I did that program about the water quality down here in Latin America. You know, the one where I said that practically all the inland water is polluted. So let me give you some more explanation on that. So as not to completely scare you, I'll qualify that a little bit by saying that if you live high up in the mountains or at the foot of the mountains where there are no people upstream, you'll have pretty much unspoiled water. Obviously, if there's no city, town, factory, or farm upstream, there will be no pollution. But if there's any human activity at all upstream, you can bet 100% of the time that there'll always be polluted runoff. And eventually, you'll be taking your showers in it and mixing your margaritas with it. So, what to do? Now, I should mention, if you're a gringo, putting in a first-world-style project, a hotel or a restaurant, or perhaps bringing a first-world franchise down, well, then you'll absolutely have to follow the letter of the law, meaning you'll have to have first-world-style drainage and sewage systems installed. At least your architect will have to have them on the building plans. And maybe, just maybe, a government inspector might come out sometime while you're building to look at it. But I wouldn't bet money on it. Like I said before, inspectors might never come out unless you're building a big first-world project like a Clarion or a Hilton Hotel. Then you're the big fish on the block and a lot of eyes are going to be on you. Anyway, the fact is, us first world people, when we do come down here and build projects, or when big first world development companies come down here, let's say, and build a mall, we actually do not scrimp on the sewage facilities and sometimes actually go overboard in the other direction because who wants raw crap and sludge going into their neighborhood river? Us modern first worlders really frown on creating our own little love canals and crapping in our own backyards. Whereas Latins, well, they just don't give a damn. And if that's a place they can cut corners on the project, you can bet they'll absolutely do it. So basically, because down here, inspections are so hit and miss, mostly miss. When you're ready to build, after you've submitted your plans and paid your fees and got your permit to start, you are on the honor system. Which really does work quite well when you're dealing with first worlders, which is part of that sterling reputation we gringos down here off the tourist trail seem to have with the locals, whether we deserve it or not. It's a part of that gringo advantage, you know? But for Latins, like I said, they seem not to mind crapping in their own backyards. They do it all the time. Even expat Eddie's dad, who was a real carny, used to say, even a dog doesn't piss in his own bed. But he never visited Latin America, thank God. So anyway, I'm getting a lot of emails from people who are pretty alarmed about the water quality down here. And they basically want to know, if the water's so contaminated, what about water sports and swimming and snorkeling and diving and all that fun stuff? And here's what I've got to say about that. If you plan on going to a beach resort, you can go out into the water and swim and play and do just about anything you want, as long as you're at a location that's far away from any kind of a town or a city, even a small town of, let's say, 5,000. But only if that resort or beachfront is located on the Pacific, Atlantic, or in the Caribbean. So that means forget about water sports in most inland lakes and rivers. If you're there, just stick with the pool. Oh, and speaking of pools, those things are vastly under-maintained down here too, so you are taking a big chance if you use one, unless it's one on the premises of a big first-world project, like a Clarion or a Hilton or one of those all-inclusive resorts. They're safe enough, and that's because franchises and first-world corporations follow first-world water sanitation standards. Oh, and here's something I almost forgot to mention. Never, and I mean never, use a public jacuzzi or hotel or resort jacuzzi or wet sauna down here. Unless you don't mind bathing in the bacterial soup of the last 100 people who used the thing. And in fact, that goes for saunas and jacuzzis in most of the first world, too. Those things are virtual cesspools, but infinitely better than the ones down here, I can tell you. My recommendation, wherever you are, is to only use a jacuzzi that's just been filled. Never use one that's had water standing in it already. Because no matter how nice the water looks, you'll never know how long that water's been in there, when the filter's been changed, if ever, or what the maintenance schedule is, or if they even have one. So anyway, if you are taking a vacation at a beachside resort, you have to really make sure you're maintaining a good distance from the nearest population. And how far away is far enough? Well, it depends on the size of the city. If it's only a town of 5,000, maybe 2 or 3 miles away would be plenty. But if it's a bigger city of 100 or 200,000, well, you got to get about 10 miles away, believe me. And you know what? There is an easy way to plan a thing like that. Just go on Google Earth. And even though I hate Google, because it's like a light version of Big Brother, Google Earth itself is a tremendous service. So anyway, here's what you do. You go on Google Earth and you look for the spot that you want to spend a beach vacation at. And you check out the aerial view of the towns and cities nearest to your beach. And then you have a look at the water around the little town or city that's closest to it. And you'll notice that you'll always be able to detect some slightly off-colored water surrounding that town or village, kind of like a mucky halo around the place, until it hits a certain point in the ocean and then it basically fades away. Now, that, my friends, is your zone of scum. You want to avoid that at all costs, that obvious chemical and fecal contamination zone. What I'm saying is that each town in Latin America along a coastline or a waterway, which most are, is like an island sitting in the middle of a toilet. Now, that doesn't mean that once you've got past that little line of demarcation and now you're into the beautiful blue part of the ocean, all of a sudden you're all clear. Personally, I'd still advise staying a mile or two away from that border where there's an obvious color change in the water. If you're going to go and play in the water, that is. And remember, this obviously doesn't apply if you're just going to walk the sand and hang around at the pool. But people generally go to a beach to jump in the water, right? At least, I do. Okay, so now you'll also notice on Google Earth that where rivers meet the ocean, that area that they call an estuary, you can also see a definite line of demarcation in color, which is totally normal. Now, when any river hits and mixes with the ocean, there'll always be a lot of muck and turbulence, which could be perfectly natural. Or it could be mixed with terrible amounts of pollution and sludge from cities and uneducated brain-dead human pigs upstream. That's why if you're looking to buy or rent or have a vacation on a waterway, you should use Google Earth to look upstream to see how many towns and villages are snuggling up to that river. And you can be sure their toilet water is directly connected. That's a guarantee. So even though a lot of rivers do look nice and clean, especially when you're driving out in the boonies, and you might be thinking, hey, that would be a great place to buy a piece of land, build a house, retire, have a natural garden and all that. Well, let me tell you, you best check Google Earth first. Now, if there are a couple of towns 100 or so miles upstream, there's a real good chance that nature's filtration processes, you know, the fish, the trees, the organisms, the roots, and all the other symbiotic biological eventualities, will have pretty much cleaned up that water completely by the time it reaches you, as you wade along the shore of that little piece of paradise you may have selected to live or hang out. Or not. And if you plan on staying there long term, you really must take samples and have that water tested. And not just off the bank of the side you're going to buy or build. Take a few measurements at different times of the day. And preferably over some months, too. Because, you see, here's what happens down here in Latin America. One month it might be coconut harvesting season. Another month it might be coffee. Then it might be mangoes or sugarcane. And guess what? If there's any kind of processing plant up and down the river, like, for example, that nasty palm oil stuff, if you got a plantation like that upstream from you, they've got these big nasty-ass refineries that only operate a couple of months out of the year, during the palm nut season. Guess where the unusable part of the process gets dumped? In the rivers and lakes, of course. Even if it's forbidden, they'll find a way to dump it there. Because 98% of the time, no one's watching. And never, never build or buy or swim or play in water that's downstream from a mining company. Even if one of those things is 200 miles upstream, you can be sure there'll be heavy metals like cadmium and arsenic and even worse. Some of it making its way hundreds of miles downstream. And how do mining companies get away with that? Well, it's simple. They pay off the politicians to get the permits. Then, some years later, when a new crop of politicians come in and the damage has been done and the kids living downstream are smaller in stature, have lower IQs, and have diminished sperm counts. Well, I guess all of Latin America could use a lower sperm count, but that's another topic we'll get to later. Anyway, if the mine's not tapped out by then, they'll be grandfathered in by the new administration as the mining companies grease the palms of the new wave of corrupt politicians. So, you might be thinking, what about those beautiful places like Cancun and Playa del Carmen and Tulum where that sea looks so beautiful and clear with all those first world hotels and development projects? You have to assume with all that tourism that they're going to take care of the water effluent to make sure they can preserve that coral reef out there. I mean, that's what people go to Cancun for, right? Along with that whole Yucatan area that stretches down to Belize, known as the Mayan Riviera. People go down there for one thing. To play in that white sand and that beautiful water. Well, I'm here to tell you a completely different story. And I'm sure it's one that you haven't heard and no one wants to talk about. Listen to this. Now, back in 1974, when Cancun was a collection of laminated buildings, tin huts, and was just a little fishing village, before spring breaks and Girls Gone Wild videos caught on, it only had about 2,000 people. Now, guess what? It gets 8 million visitors a year. But the water still looks nice, you say, right? Yeah, but did you know that it now has over 500 major hotels and 100,000 hotel beds? And the fact is that pollution from pig farms and golf courses and septic tanks and hotels have pretty much completely ruined the water quality of that nice blue water. Even though it looks so very nice. Have you been there? Now, here's the thing. About 25 years ago, all the new hotels in the area, that's hundreds of them, including all the ones built since, were required to inject their human wastewater deep below the drinking water aquifer. Now, that was a good idea some 25 years ago, but now it's seeping up through the rocks and into the aquifers, and it's flushing directly out into the sea. And just recently, a study funded by the U.S. Nature Conservancy measured the quality of the coral reef in that tourist area from Cancun down through Playa del Carmen all the way down to Tulum. They measured the reef in 350 places and found out that 80% of the coral have been destroyed in the last 20 years. And why is that happening so fast? Well, that U.S. study says that nutrients from human feces and urine and fertilizers from golf courses are terminally poisoning the reef, along with the pig and chicken farm waste. And because of graft and corruption, naturally, when Cancun started legislating tougher water quality laws just 20 years ago, about two-thirds of the big resort hotels were already built and were grandfathered in, which means about one-third of the wastewater from tourist developments is actually treated, with the rest going straight into that aquifer, underwater rivers, or directly into the sea. So, bottom line, don't drink the water out of your tap. And like expat Eddie always says, if you're out there playing in the crystal clear waters, don't swallow. I've heard that one before. But should you be surfing and skiing out in that crystal blue water? Well, expat Eddie also says, if you're on the Mayan Riviera, whatever bacteria or disorder you might pick up while splashing around in the surf will be nothing compared to the booze, drugs, and contaminated salads you'll stuff down your throat while you're partying your brains out. Because, after all, you are on vacation. And if you don't end up embarrassingly sloshed at least a few times, well, expat Eddie would say you just weren't trying hard enough. Now, me personally, I wouldn't stick a toe in any inland lake or stream in any place in Latin America at all. However, about 80% of the ocean coastal areas are far enough away from polluting populations that there's really not a problem at all. There are still millions of great beachfront and coastal spots left, if that's the kind of life you want to lead as a permanent expat. So don't be put off too much by my pollution stories. You just have to keep your eye open and scout around. And by the way, there are plenty of high-grade water testing labs down here that are dirt cheap. And speaking of clean water, I got to give you a little update on that Sawyer water filter that I talked about on one of my previous shows. You know, the one that's supposed to filter out 1 million gallons, guaranteed. Which is like 35 human lifetimes if you live to be 80 and drink a gallon of water a day. Anyway, like I said, I really believe this is the last water filter you'll ever need. But I have recently been notified by a number of emailers saying they couldn't get the Sawyer SP-121 anymore because it's just been discontinued in favor of the Sawyer SP-122 model, which is the same price, about $50. Except that the SP-122 comes with a quick disconnect hose, so you can rapidly switch between your faucet under pressure for continuous flow, or use it when you're camping or backpacking as a regular straw in a bottle type device. So anyway, if you're going to get that filter, go for the Sawyer SP-122 model. It's just more convenient. And here's another interesting thing about the water situation down here in Latin America. Now, they don't have that huge debate going on down here about fluoride in water because they just don't have it in the water down here, which is a good thing, right? And if you still believe that it actually protects your teeth, just go online, look it up, and weep. In fact, these days, any enlightened first world dentist will not endorse fluoride anymore. He might even admit that it's a dangerous toxin. Though he might tell you that sheepishly because, after all, 5 or 10 years ago, every dentist and hygienist was pushing it like it was the end-all to all cavities and decay. And even today, all the toothpaste companies are pushing fluoride still. Man, wouldn't that be a great marketing scheme for Colgate or Crest to come out with a toothpaste that did not have fluoride? I thought they'd have done that years ago, but no dice. Anyway, down here in Latin America, no municipality puts fluoride in their water. And believe me, it's not because people running the water treatment plants in the municipalities are enlightened themselves. In fact, I think they're all functional illiterates. But the two main reasons they don't put fluoride in the water down here is because, one, it's too expensive, and two, they might overdose a whole city and kill everyone, because fluoride is a toxin. In fact, a very powerful toxin that's got to be kept in a very tiny range of about 1 part per million in a municipal supply. And that takes good equipment and a lot of monitoring. Now, most Latin American municipalities put chlorine in their water supplies, but they're so lackadaisical about it that one day, if you turn on the tap, it might stink to high heaven of chlorine, and the next day, there's no hint of chlorine at all. So obviously, nobody seems to be minding the store down at the local water company, which isn't surprising because all government agencies down here are terribly spotty and inconsistent, if not completely useless. Now, the thing is, chlorine, you can screw around with the concentration a great deal and not kill anyone. Not to mention, at pretty high concentrations, it's pretty stinky. In fact, generally so nauseating that at high dosages, people won't drink it. But fluorine's a completely different story. It's tasteless and odorless and kills at such low concentrations that you could drink a lethal dose and not even know it. So you can predict that the day one of these big cities like Rio or Buenos Aires or Panama City decides to fluoridate their water, well, that's the day there's going to be the start of a lot of mysterious deaths. But thankfully, I don't see that happening anytime soon. I mean, it's true. All these places down here in Latin America are trying to be first world as much as they can, and they never seem quite able to pull it off. So, before they ever get around to fluoridating the water, they'll first have to figure out how they can give you water more than 8 hours a day, and figure out how to remove the fecal contamination. Duh. And that is still beyond their basic capabilities here. Which again is, one, why you always want to purify your own water, and two, always try to live in a colony or a subdivision that has its own well. Now, if you do have to use municipal water, make sure you have a nice big cistern that acts as a reserve tank, because you can be sure that your water will not be on 24 hours a day. And sure, municipal water is contaminated, but if you purify your own, you'll be absolutely okay. And about taking a shower with water that you wouldn't drink, well, that's your own call. If you're using municipal water, just have it tested and see for yourself. There's no doubt it's going to be a lot cleaner than the polluted rivers and streams around here. But like I said before, sometimes it looks absolutely awful. So try not to panic when you land at the airport in a place like Tegucigalpa, Honduras, because I guarantee when you turn on the faucet in the bathroom, John, it'll be some disgusting shade of yellow or brown. That, my friends, is when you'll take out that little Sawyer water purifier, which is only about 3 or 4 inches long, and you'll slam it on that faucet with the quick connect and breathe a nice big sigh of relief. But watch out, because all the local guys in the bathroom are going to gather around to check out the nutty gringo. But back to that fluoride in the water thing. Since Latin Americans do not have fluoride in their municipal water supplies, some traditionalists would say, well, then Latin American kids must have tons of cavities. Much more than their first world counterparts, right? Well, yes, compared to first worlders, they do have tons of cavities, and it's not because of lack of fluoride, believe me, since that's all BS anyway. It's because, for one, parents have never taught their kids about good oral hygiene, and because about 85 to 90% of Latin Americans never go to the dentist unless they're in severe pain. That means they never go in just for a routine cleaning. And like I said before, hygienists don't exist down here. So they never get those little happy tooth diagrams and lessons that the hygienists always give kids. Now, another reason why Latin kids and adults have so many cavities is because so many of them suck on sugar and sugary candies all day long. Remember, Latin America is the land of sugar cane. It grows wild on the sides of roads and even in people's backyards. So oftentimes you'll be driving by or walking by some kids, and you'll see them sucking on a stubby blade of grass, which is actually a piece of sugar cane, raw sugar. Basically, they've got free lollipops growing alongside the road. Now, you have that in your mouth all day, and you don't floss and you brush maybe 15 seconds each night, if you're lucky, and what do you think's going to happen? But, ta-da, big food manufacturing companies have come to the rescue. Now, get this. Lately, in the past few years, I've noticed that when you buy salt at the grocery store, you can now get iodized salt, like up in the first world, and you can get it with fluoride added. Yep, salt with fluoride. Now, as you might imagine, there have been, in the big newspapers down here, marketing campaigns to try to get parents to buy salt with fluoride because it supposedly reduces tooth decay. And of course, parents are falling for it because it doesn't cost anymore, and naturally, their kids have a lot of cavities, so they believe the propaganda. Why wouldn't they? It's another great idea that came down from those first world gringos. And the thing is, I've talked to a lot of dentists down here about that, and every single one of them is happy about it. They say that fluoride is a good thing. Now, you have to remember, like I said before, dentistry down here in Latin America, unlike medicine, which is quite up to date, dentists are stuck about 10 or 15 years behind dentists up in the first world. Even the best dentists here are not quite up to date, which isn't a bad thing, but you've got to know it. And that means even the best dentists down here are working like dentists did back in the 1990s up in the States. And in the 1990s, everybody was pushing fluoride hard and heavy up there. Remember that? Back then, there was no such thing as a naturopathic or holistic dentist. It was all about drilling and filling and crowns and bridges and fluoride trays for the kids, which made kids occasionally vomit and cry. Remember that? So, needless to say, my advice, skip the salt with the fluoride. But again, don't be militant about it when you see some Latin person you know using it in his or her salt shaker. Don't go into high gear with information overload. You'll just confuse them with the facts, and you know how that'll turn out, don't you? Soon enough, you just won't get invited to the family parties anymore. Though, that might be a good thing, you know? Especially if you've got a weak stomach. Now, to change gears a little bit, I do get a lot of emails asking me for some more Expat Eddie stories. Well, I've got one for you here. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I met up with Expat Eddie in San Pedro Sula, Honduras, and he had a tale to tell. He decided to take a ride with his girlfriend in her new car. From El Salvador up through Honduras, through Guatemala, and on to Belize, where he booked a week at a beach resort in Placentia, Belize. Now, Eddie, of course, like any gentleman, insisted on doing the driving. And as he was driving through El Salvador, no problems at all. But as soon as he hit the Honduras border, he started getting stopped by the cops. In fact, he was stopped 4 times total, about once an hour through his trip through Honduras. He said that was about every other time that he passed one of those police roadblocks. And they stopped him every time for the same reason, because he had out-of-country plates. He was driving with Salvador plates, and he was in Honduras. They spot plates right away and try to extort money from drivers for any little violation they can get you on. Like, for example, not wearing a seatbelt. Even though they'd never nail one of their own countrymen for that. That's the little game they play with out-of-towners. Now, Eddie, like any experienced expat, knew when to use his Spanish and knew when to play dumb. And the cop, at first, always asks the same question. ¿Porta armas? Which means, are you carrying a gun? And all of us expats know it'd be nuts to carry a gun. into any country it's not registered in, or they'll confiscate it and give you a fine. Okay, so Eddie didn't have a gun. But do you remember how I always tell you to buy one of those zipper belts, one that looks like a normal leather belt but has a zipper built into the back side where you can hide up to $1,000 if you want, and nobody will be the wiser? Now, of course, Eddie wears one of these things all the time because who knows, if you get into trouble or you get robbed or a car accident or you lose your wallet or whatever, that'll be a nice emergency stash. Anyway, Eddie had one of these belts and he had one for his girlfriend too, in which he also had a stash of about $1,000. But his girlfriend, being a runway model, and as goes with the territory, she dresses to the hilt. Because of that, she's always color and fabric coordinated when she goes out. And that day in the car, she put up a stink because that money belt did not coordinate with what she was wearing. Poor baby, it just didn't match her outfit, you know? So Eddie wore both belts. He had one through the normal loops of his pants and the other one wrapped around his bare waist right above that. Anyway, so he got pulled over by one of those cops. He lifted up Eddie's shirt to see his fanny pack, which was a decoy, of course, and he saw the two belts. That made the cop suspicious, and he pulled another cop over to look at it. Then he said to Eddie in Spanish, "Why are you wearing two belts?" which caught Eddie completely off guard. And Eddie says in Spanish, which was a bad move, he says, "It's just an old extra belt." Well, the cop then says, "Well, if it's an extra belt, you don't need it, right? So can I have it?" And Eddie, speechless for the first time in his life, ended up spilling the beans after a long pregnant pause. He said, "Officer, it's an emergency belt." Then the cop says, "Oh yeah? Let me see how it works." So Eddie flipped it over, unzips just a little bit of it, and the cop sees $100 bill in there. And the cop says, "What's that for?" And Eddie says, "It's for emergency." And the cop says, "You know what? I think we have an emergency right now." So Eddie had no recourse but to forfeit it up to the guy. But to make matters worse, that 100 was actually three 100 bills folded together. You know, like a month's salary for the cop. Needless to say, the cops were extremely friendly after that. And Eddie? Well, he didn't talk to his girlfriend for about 6 hours. And on the way home, guess what? He wasn't such a gentleman. He made her wear the belt and drive. And wouldn't you know it, as they went through all 8 of those police barriers on the way back through Salvador, Eddie's girlfriend got pulled over a total of 6 times. And when she threw the cop a smile or a little pout, she got waved right on through every time. Yep, I guess there is one thing that'll trump the gringo advantage.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, coming to you each week from somewhere south of the border. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture. He knows.